Okay, today's daf is Kuf Lamed Aleph. We'll try to get through most of Kuf Lamed, but we'll see how far we get. Okay, by Rava. By Rava, Bibari Heach. So when Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka says that a person, and that was the whole Mishnah, that a person's allowed to give his inheritance to one of the sons, Ben Kol HaBanim. So if you remember, we said a minute yesterday that it's all based on this pasuk, v'haya b'yom hanchilo et banav. Right? That he then has the rights to give the nachalah to whoever he wants. And right, because then it said lo yuchal levaker, which means you just can't give the b'chor pishnayim, but if you wanted to divide up the property in some other way, you'd be allowed to. But that all takes place when v'haya b'yom hanchilo et banav, presumably on his deathbed. So the question that Rav is asking now is, what about a case of a bari, when someone's healthy? What if he wants to write a will many years earlier? Is he allowed to decide, merosh, that he's only giving it to one of the children? Or, you know, you could say to two out of four, whatever it is. Kika amar Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka b'shchiv meira debaro rotehu. Maybe it only is by a shchiv meira. These are the two sides of the argument, because he's bar yerusha, right? He's bar horasha. At that point, he can be morish to his sons on his deathbed. Aval bibari, you might say bibari lo. O dilma afilu bibari nami, or maybe he has the rights to write a will whenever he wants during his life and decide what's going to be in the future. So amar le rav sharshi ala rava, tashma. Let's learn it from this case. Okay, now we're going to get into a long braita. So we'll stop for a minute in terms of our flow. We'll get what's going on in the braita, and then we'll go back. De amar le rabbi Natan le rabbi. Okay, Rabbi Natan was from Bavel. We'll see later. Rebbe calls him the Bavli. Rabbi Natan was from Bavel, right, which was rare in the Tanaitic times. And he says to Rebbe, Shanitem Mishnechem ke Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. Are you teaching your Mishnayot that they follow Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka? In other words, even though later on we see that we all paskin like Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, Rabbi Natan was questioning the fact that Rebbe seems to teach Mishnayot according to the theory of Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. How do we know this? How does Rabbi Natan know this? He says, Ditnan, because here's a mission in Ketubot, which says, Lo katavla binin dichrin dehavu leminach, inu nyartin kesef ketubatech, yotero chul kehen de'imachohon, chayav. Okay, let's stop for a minute. If somebody doesn't write this si'if in the Ketubah that deals with the banim zcharim, okay, let's go back to what this is. In the Ketubah, what would happen? The husband would commit all this money to the wife. In addition, what else was included in the ketubah money? The money that the woman brought into her marriage, the nedunya basically. The father of the bride gives money to the wife to have during her marriage. What happens with that money? So that's called nichsei tzon barzel. What happens with nichsei tzon barzel?
She keeps it, but he gets the profits.
Well, right, he gets to keep the profits, but actually with the tzon barzel, he's allowed to sell it, but he always has to return it. It's tzon barzel. It's barzel is solid. So what it means is he has to return it at the end of the marriage, not necessarily the item itself, but the value of it. Okay, he has to give back the value that it was when it came into the marriage, as opposed to the nichsei malug, which if they go down in value, so he only has to return it at the lower value. But the nichsei tzon barzel, so he has to return it at the exact same value. So what's the relevance? The relevance is that all this money is going to eventually get returned to the woman, unless what happens? She dies first. If she dies first, what's going to happen? It goes to the husband. So the father, and if it goes to the husband, what's going to happen? It's going to go to his sons. Let's say he has another wife. It'll go to his sons from the other marriage and her sons. So her sons will lose out. They won't get the full nedunya that was originally hers. In which case, what's going to happen? The father's not going to want to give so much money for the dowry because he knows that down the road it's very likely that his sons, his grandchildren, won't end up with the money. And therefore, he might not give as much. So what did they do? They made a takana that all the money that she brings into the marriage and her ketubah money, all of it will go to only her children. Now, what is this? This is a classic case of the father's now determining meirosh. Notice, by the way, this connects with, he's right. He's not a shechiv meira. This is something he's putting into the ketubah that he can choose one over the other. Now, what does this Mishnah say? This Mishnah says, what if he didn't write it in the ketubah? Okay, let's go through the words now. Lo katavla, he didn't write in the ketubah, banim dichrim, banim scharim, dehavu leminai, that I will have through you, Inun, heim, yartun, here's the key word, yirshun, they will inherit, not, I will give them as a gift. Remember, if I give them as a gift, then it's not necessarily Rabbi Yochanan ben Broga, it could be anybody. But yirshun is specifically Yerusha, okay? They will be yoresh, kesef ktubatech, yoter al kehen de imachohon. They will get your kesef ktuba more than the share that they will get from your brother. Okay? If he didn't say this whole thing, chayav, he anyway has to give it to the banim zecharim, even if he didn't put it in the marriage contract. Why? Shetanai beitin hu. Okay, it's a tanai beitin. Since it's a tanai beitin, right? Therefore, what did we learn? We learned the whole issue of ketubah is a tanai beitin. That if somebody doesn't give a ketubah to his wife, it's such a thing that the takana, it was a takana of the beitin that everybody has to do this. And therefore, even if you didn't do it, it's as if you did it. Okay, so that's not that part that's relevant to us, really, although it's important, and we'll see it comes back up in the diyun later. But the important part is, here it says, a husband's writing this when he's getting married, he's not on his deathbed, and he writes Yershun, and he decides that I'm going to give more Yerusha to someone over somebody else. So basically, this sounds like, right, if it's Yertun, which is Yershun, then it's only Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka who holds that you can do this. Because Chachamim would say, if you use the Lashon of Matana, it would have worked. But if you use the Lashon of Yerusha, it won't work. So, Amar Le Rebbe, how does Rebbe answer the issue where he's kind of under attack, and why are you teaching your Mishnah only according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka? So what does he say? Oh, change this word Yershun to Yazbun. Lashon of Nitina. I will give it Lahasev, like to pass it on to. Okay? So, I will give it to my sons. In other words, the text really should say Yasbun and not Yershun. By the way, it's interesting that Rebbe's changing the wording of a Mishnah. He's the one who wrote, you know, again, he didn't really write the Mishnayot. He compiled them. So he's basically saying there's a mistake here and it should be Yasbun tonight.
That substantiates what we learned yesterday, is that you can't just take a law. You have to sort of ask the person. Because here he's, you know.
So you're saying, right, right. Whether he himself wrote, again, he didn't really write the Mishnah. He put things together. But yeah, I do think he has a little more credibility here to say that I really meant Yershun. Yasbun, not Yershun. But it's not so clear whether he's saying I meant it. Again, we see this all the time where they change wording of Mishnayot. But now it's going to be interesting because then I'm a Rebbe, Yaldu Taitabi, Behe Azti Panai Benatana Bavli. He says, that was so immature what I did. Okay? I can't believe I answered like that, and I was chutzpahdik to Natan Abavli, where, you know, he feels like it was chutzpahdik that he just said, and this is why, Shari, I don't so much agree with you reading, because he himself now says, and that's maybe another case, but in this case, he's saying, I was just throwing that out at him, but really, that wasn't so great. And why? Because, right, I have a better answer. Ela dekaimalan benin dichrin lo tarfe mimishabde. Why? Actually, he's not saying I have a better answer right now. Now he's saying it can't possibly be that the nusach was yasbun. Why? Okay? If you said yasbun, that means I'm giving it to you as a gift. If I'm giving it to you as a gift, then when does it apply? When does the sale start? The sale starts immediately at the time of the giving of the ketubah. Even though they're only going to inherit later, he's basically giving it to them from now. If he's giving it to them from now, it's almost like there's an IOU. Now, if there's an IOU, then what will be? Let's say, now remember, the ketubah money comes from karka the husband has. The husband's karka is mishuabad to the ketubah. So what will happen if he basically is giving this as a gift, and then he sells property, and he has no property left when the time comes and right, the wife is dead, and then the husband dies. His property is now going to go to his sons from the ketubah money. And remember, the wife has to predecease the husband for all this to happen. Then what will happen? If it's a gift, they should be able to go and collect it from people who bought property off of the husband, mishuabadim. But the halacha is that lo tarfe mi mishuabadim. Okay? So he says, ela dekaimalan, it's known, it's a fact. The banin dichrin lo tarfe mi mishabde. They can't take this from land that was sold. So isal kadatach yasbun tnan amai lo tarfe mi mishabde. Ela shma mina yartun tnan. So what does he say? If it was really a gift, there'd be no reason why they couldn't take it from mishuabadim. If it's yerusha, then yerusha takes place at the death of the husband. There's nothing lean to these banim dichrin because they're only getting yerusha when the husband dies. So therefore, it only makes sense to say that it was Yerusha and not Matana. Matana would have taken place earlier, and everything would have been Meshuabad to that. So therefore, he says, even though I suggested it was Yasbun, I made a mistake in saying that. It can't possibly be Yasbun. You see here, again, we saw this the other day, that someone's taking responsibility. It was Rava the other day who took responsibility for his mistake. And he says, I can't believe I did that. The Ha'azti Panai B'fnei, right, Yaldut Nichnes Haitabi. It was an immaturity, and I went back at him. Anyway, okay, getting away from the whole content here, the back and forth, I should say, the main point is that Tznan man shamat leidi lehai svara Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka ushmamina afilu bebari. What comes out of this? If in the end the conclusion it is Yerusha, and the husband's allowed to decide, I'm going to give it all to some of my sons over other of my sons, it's clear that this is Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka's shita. Clear. Okay. So in the end, what do you see? It's Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka's shita, and it's a case of a bari. So our whole question we started out with, Rava asked, is Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka's halacha takef also for a bari and not just someone on his deathbed, since we learned it from Bayabi Yom Anchilot Banav, sounding like someone's on his deathbed? No, the answer is even a bari is allowed to do this. Okay. That would be nice. But now we're going to get into a discussion about Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi and why he originally thought to say Yasbun. Okay, so comes Rav Papa. We're going to have a bit of a long-winded discussion here. Comes Rav Papa and says to Abaye, Amar le Rav Papa la Abaye, Bein lamanda amar Yasbun, ubein lamanda amar Yartun. Now he's basically going to say in a minute, I'll preface with what he's going to do. He's going to say, I don't understand why Rebbe didn't answer in the first case. Okay, remember, there was a question Rabbi Natan Abavli asked Rebbe. In other words, is your Mishnah really according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka? He answered, let's change the text, the Nusach. It's not Yartun, it's Yasbun, Lashon Matana, in which case it also matches Chachamim. Then he rejected his own answer and was stuck into saying it was Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. But the question is, why did he answer the first answer and change the text when he could have had a better answer? What was his better answer? So Rav Papa says to Abaye, whether you say Yasbun or whether you say Yartun, there's another problem in this whole case, which is Ha'en Adam Makne Davar Shelo Bala Olam. Vafilu L'Rabbi Meir Damar Adam Makne Davar Shelo Bala Olam Hanimile L'Davar She'yeshno Bala Olam Aval Davar She'eno Bala Olam Lo. We have this concept that what? A person can't be Makne something that's not in this world. Now, not only are we talking about the thing itself, but who is he machne to? In this case, the husband's getting married. He doesn't have any children yet. And he's basically saying, I'll marry you, and I'll give your ketubah money after I inherit it, after I die. I will then give it to your sons over my sons. What sons? They don't exist. And even if you want to say it's like Rabbi Meir, who holds you can be machne to varshalo bal olam, what's he talking about? If you remember the classic case, he's talking about when there's a tree and the fruits of the tree, right, which are going to grow, as opposed to, now you could, right, people make comparisons to children and trees and all that, but there's less likelihood of a child necessarily, right, and leaving children in the future, we don't know, rather than, you know, fruits which are already there, right, the tree is already there. So in this case, they say, Rabbi Meir would not be relevant to this case either. So basically, how can you possibly do this from a separate reason? Forget about Yartun, Yasbun. That's not even irrelevant, right? That's not the only problem here. How can he possibly be makneh something that doesn't even exist yet? Or to someone, I should say, that doesn't exist yet. So what do we say? Lo'olam, hanemile, l'davar she'yeshno... Wait, did I skip? Right, no. Right, hanemile, l'davar she'yeshno ba'olam, l'davar she'yeshno ba'olam, lo. Ela. What's the answer? T'nai beitin shanei. What's the reason? The reason that this works is because the rabbis made a takana. When the rabbis make a takana, they can do something that goes against a principle because there's some higher value here. What's the value? Again, the fathers will give nice-sized dowries to their daughters. If they know the money's going to be split up among all the inheritors and other sons, he's not going to give such a nice dowry, and we want to encourage him to give a nice dowry. Therefore, they made a takana. So they can make a takana that Adam can be makne davar shelo bal olam in this case. In which case, go back to the very beginning. What could Rabbi Yehuda Nasi have responded? When Rabbi Nazar Babli said, this is all according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, he could say, no. This, hachanami, also here, it's a tanai beitin shane. The reason why it works, even though generally chachamim would say you can't just give the property to whoever you want, in this case, it's a takana. And a takana, in a takana case, chachamim make a takana. They can make a takana that goes against the general, right? In other words, even chachamim would agree with them in this kind of case, that there's a reason for a takana, so we allow it. So why didn't he answer that? So now they say the reason he didn't answer that in the first place and instead said yasbun is because Amar le mishum dekamapik le belashon yartun. Okay? What's the reason? Because the whole question of Rabbi Natan of Bavli was, look, the Lashon says Yerusha, and therefore it matches only Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. So what did Rabbi want to do? He wanted to answer exactly what the question was. In other words, even if you say it's a Tanai Beit Din, it doesn't look good. It looks like Yerusha we equate with Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. If you're going to use Yerusha and do it differently than laws of inheritance, that only matches Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. So because the problem was in the Lashon of Yerusha, he preferred to answer it. He could have answered it Tanai Beit Din Shani, but he preferred to answer it by changing the wording of the Mishnah. Okay, that was his preferred option. But now, Abaye, so this is what Abaye answered to Rav Papa, right? Rav Papa said, I don't understand. And then, right, why didn't he just use Tanai Beit Din? So Abaye answers, because it was in Lashon Yerusha. But then, Hadar Amar Abaye changes his answer. And he says, wait a minute. Lav Milti, we're going to have a lot of back and forth here of Abaye with himself. Lav Milti to Amre. It's not good what I just said. Ditnan, lo katavlam binan Nukvan to have lechi minai, yahavu yatve bebetivi itzana min chasai aditi lakhan leguvrin chayav shu tanai beitin. Okay, the continuation of that mission in Ketubot was that there's something for banim scharim and there's something for banot nikevot. Okay, what do we do for the banot nikevot? They get mezonot. Now, here's an interesting halacha. We learned this in Ketubot. I don't know if you remember, but children get mezonot from their father. He's responsible only until age 6. After age 6, he is not responsible to give them mizonot. It's a little crazy, okay? It happens, okay, Ikar Adin, that's the law, okay? We're going to learn it out. We're going to drive it out from here. But there happen to be ways to override this, okay? They talk about it. If he's an Adam Ashir and he doesn't do it, then they force him, I wrote this all down. If he's an Adam Ashir, then they force him, okay? Like midin staka, okay? They force him to give staka basically to his children. If he's not
until
a shir, what?
Until another age?
So we'll see. I guess if they need it, I guess at a certain point, I don't know. They don't. Again, it's not mikar adin, so it's much looser here in general. If he's not rich, then they kind of the beit din comes and says, "Come on, you really should give your kids the money." And if not, they start embarrassing him in public. We saw this, by the way, if you remember, that they start embarrassing him in public in order to get him to basically give his children food. Okay? But Mikar Adin only until age 6. Until when? Until his death. Upon his death, so he commits in the ketubah of the woman that he's going to support the woman, and also he's going to support the banot nekevot. So at that point, right, the assumption is the banim scharim take care of themselves, and also they get the inheritance, and from that they'll survive. The banot don't get the inheritance as long as there's banim, so they get food at that point. Okay, now how do we know? So now we're going to see if he doesn't write in the ketubah the banot nekevo to have lechi minai, right? They come from you. Yahavu yafin bebeiti v'yitzanim yirchasai will sit in my house. Here's the lashon. They're going to say yahavun is. They will get, like the Lashon of Matana. Okay, this is where we're going here. So they will get a Matana, okay? They will get from me, Yitzana min Chasai, they'll get Mizono from my property. Until what point? Aditi lakhan leguvrin. Until they get married, basically. Okay, and maybe that's the answer to what you were asking, Ruth, that if, in terms of Lami Karadin, until what time are we going to force them? Until someone else provides for them, which is up to which point they get married. So, if he doesn't write this, Chayav Shehu Tanai Beitin. Now, what do we see here? We started with the Takana of the Banim Scharim, which was B'Lashon Yerusha. Then we went to the Lashon, the Nikevot, which is in the Lashon of Matana. So, go back to yesterday's Sugya. V'hava L'zeb Matana U'L'zeb Yerusha. V'kol L'zeb Yerusha U'L'zeb Matana Filo Rabbanan Modu. So, now he's saying, I said that he wanted to answer B'Lashon Yerusha, but there's a separate thing, which is it doesn't make any sense Why did he even need, right? It should have just been even a better answer was Lezebe Matana v'Lezebe Yerusha. And then he could have said even Rabbanan agrees. So why didn't Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi give that answer? Okay, so now, remember what we said about Lezebe Matana v'Lezebe Yerusha, that this is actually two dapim ago, that you have to say it all, right? We have this whole thing, it has to be Toch Kedei Dibur maybe, right? And that that was where we ended that sugya with it. And it has to be said, obviously, by the same person. So now, the assumption right now that Abaye has is that the assumption is this is all a takana, like a tanai beitin, a takana chamim, who instituted this entire thing. The banim zcharim and the banoni kevod, and the banim zcharim were b'lashon yerusha, the banoni kevod were b'lashon matana. Therefore, we can, even according to chamim, override everything because the lashon matana is relevant for everything. So, but now he's going to reject this. Amar le Rav Nechumei. I was wrong. It's not that Abaye has a discussion with himself. Actually, Rav Nechume, or some people say it was Rav Hananya Bar Menumi, say to Abaye, Mimai, Debecha Beitina Itkun. From what assumption are you assuming that this takana all came from one Beitin? Okay? Who's to say, Dilma betray Beitina Itkun? Maybe these are two separate takanot that were made by two different Bateidin, in which case what? The Lashon HaMatana and the Lashon HaYerusha have nothing to do with each other, in which case we go back and we say, really, Rebbe did need to change the Lashon to Yazbun. So Dilma betray Betina Itkun. So then he says, Lo Sal Kadatach. Now that doesn't make any sense to say that it was done by two Batei Din. Why? Dikatani Resha, because it says before this, Zem Midrash and Ketubot there, it says, Zem Midrash Darash Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah Lefnei Chachamim v'Kerem B'Yavne. Right, what's Kerem B'Yavne? That was the Sanhedrin moved to Yavne. Why do they call it Kerem? Because Kerem has rows, right? Rows of the vineyard. And the Beit Midrash was made up of rows. Remember we saw that story where they kicked him back seven rows? Okay? So it was made up of rows. So it's called Kerem B'Yavne. So Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was Darshan before Chachamim. Habanim Yershu v'habanot Yizonu. He said, just like the Banim inherit, the Banot get Mizonot. Ma Habanim Einam Yorshim Ela Lachar Mitat Avihen. Af Banot Lo Yazunu Ela Lachar Mitat Avihen. Here's where we learn this halacha about the girls not getting Mizonot till the father dies. We learned it out from the fact that we make a comparison between these two things. Now, if we're going to compare these two things, the assumption is they were instituted in the same way by the same court, and that's why we can learn what's true for one is true for the other. So, how does it work? The Banim Scharim for sure don't inherit until the father dies, right? So when the father dies, the sons will inherit. If that's the case, then the daughters getting Mizonot was also a takana that was instituted only after the death of the father. Okay? So therefore, the assumption is, right, Iyamar Bishlama B'cha Beidina Itkun, if you want to say the whole thing was a takana that was made in one court, Hainu Dialfina Takana Mi Takana. Therefore, we can learn the details of one takana from the other takana. But Ela Iyamar Betray Beidina Itkun, Heichi Yalfina Takana Mi Takana. But if you're going to say we learned it came up in two different courts, possibly in two different times, how could you learn one from the other? So then I say, what do you mean? Mimai. Dilma lo lam em alacha betrei beidina itkun. That's not true. You really could say it was two batei din. Ubeidina batra, tikun ke beidina kama. Let's say the banot nekevo came second. Let's just say, for example, it's not clear which one came first. But when they were metake, right, I guess what you would say, according to this, it was dafka, the banot nekevo came second. Because then when they made the takana for the banot nekevot, they made it in the same way they did it for the banim scharim. Ke'echi delo tiksha takanta takanta. So that you won't say, why is one takana made one way and this takana made a different way? So therefore, in the end, they conclude it could possibly be two batei din. In which case, in the end, it explains why Rabbi originally said yasvun and not yartun, because the lashon was important. Let's remember, the whole thing was that Abaye said what forced him to say yasvun in the beginning? Because the lashon was critical, the yartun. Abaye raises, but wait, maybe the lashon wasn't important because the lashon matana comes right after that, and the matana connects with the Yerusha. But then they say no, because it's very possible. In the end, the conclusion is there were two batei din, possibly, that made these takanot, in which case the lashonot don't work together. Right? Forget about it. It certainly wasn't said toch kedei dibor, right? All the more so. It was said by two different courts. Therefore, the lashon was significant in the question of Rabbi Natan Bavli, and Rebbe didn't have a good answer, right? He would only have to answer by changing the nusach. Again, it's all based on the first answer of Rebbe, because in the end, Rebbe agrees that it's not Yesbun, it is Yartun, and it's only Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. Okay? But this is all trying to explain what Rebbe thought originally. It's interesting the Gemara is going so far as to try to figure out what was in his thinking. Okay, now we're moving on to a different topic. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel. Hakotev kol nechasav liishto. Okay, this is again getting into when somebody says something, or when somebody, in this case, he does something, he writes to his wife, I'm giving you all my property. Now, what did he mean by this? Okay, there's an assumption that he didn't actually mean to give the wife all his property. Okay, so even though he wrote, I'm giving you all my property, lo asa'a ela apitropa. Okay, what does this mean? He was just basically making her the executor of the will. And he wanted, why did he say it then, I'm giving you all my property? Because he was worried that upon his death, what might happen? His sons, particularly sons from a different marriage, would not show any respect for his wife. So he wanted to say, I'm giving her all my property to show I respect this woman and I want you to respect her when I die. And but it didn't really mean that he was giving the wife all the property and not giving his sons anything, because that would be crazy, right? Who would do that? And therefore, okay, obviously nowadays people do that, but in those days people didn't do that, and therefore the assumption is he's making her an apitropos. Pshita b'noah gadol, lo asa el apitropos. Let's say he does the same thing for his eldest, and he gives his eldest son everything. Okay? So again, there's an assumption that since the oldest son, right, in other words, it doesn't make so much sense that the father's going to give the oldest son everything, or any of the sons everything. So there's an assumption, since he's the oldest, it makes sense that what was the father doing? He was making him in charge and wanted the brothers to make sure they would respect their older brother, who's anyway deserving of respect because he's the oldest, right? There's a concept in our halacha about kaved et avicha ve'et imecha, right? Even the acha gadol. So, pshita b'no gadol lo asa al apitropos, the same thing, must have been making him the apitropos. What about b'no katan mai? What if he gives everything to the youngest son? Now, it's not typical that a father would make the youngest son the apitropos. So maybe it really means that he's giving him all his property. So itmar rav chanilai bar idi amar Shmuel, afilu b'no katan hamutal barisa. Okay, even a b'no katan hamutal barisa, still we're going to assume he's only making him an apitropos, because we can't imagine that a father would give everything to one child. What about this case? Pshita b'no v'acher. Okay, now here there's a debate about whether this is b'no v'acher together, he gives them each 50-50, or the Rashbam reads it as b'no, he gives everything, or acher, someone else, he gives everything. So we're going to assume, let's just go with the Rashbam, acher b'matana u'b'no apitropos. If he gives some random person all of his property, then the assumption is he really did mean to give that random person all his property, because it's not logical, and again, this goes against what we would do, it's not logical that he would make someone from the outside the executor of the will. Okay, in our day and age, that would be the most likely thing to do, because you would make someone who's a little less biased. But the point is, so the truth is, what they say is, even if he would have thought he's making him an apitropos, he would have said, I'm making you an apitropos. He wouldn't have said, I'm giving you all my property. In other words, what's the idea of the assumption of this Gemara? Is that by saying, I'm giving you all my property, it was a way to create respect among people who may not respect. Oh, who gave you authority to be the executor of the will? I'm the brother, you're the brother. Right? When it's brothers and siblings and the mom, who's maybe not their, not really all their mom, right? She's not the mom of all the sons. There's an issue that there might not be respect. An outside person, you can understand they would all respect because he's impartial. Whereas one of them who's got more of, especially let's say the wife has kids from her marriage and kids from his marriage, so his other marriage. So there might be a concern she's going to favor her own children. So therefore, in all those cases where there's more of an issue there, he's going to basically, he's not really meaning to make them, give them all the property. But when it's the acher, there's an assumption, if he would have made him apitropos, he should have said, I'm making him my apitropos. Okay, and so if he does b'no or acher, so the acher will be b'matana, the b'no will be apitropos. Ishto arusa, v'ishto grusha, b'matana. If he's not as connected with his wife, meaning they're just engaged, and he gives her all his property, or they're divorced and he gives her all his property, then the assumption is it's a matana. He's actually giving her a matana because he would have no reason to try to make her look more respectful in the eyes of the rest of them because she's not so significant to him yet. Of course, it's obviously strange. Why then would he be giving her all of his property? But okay. Ibai Elihu. What?
Maybe I'm putting a modern...
Yeah, modern twist.
But if the reason they're divorced is because of something that he did, and he knows that he did wrong...
Maybe he feels responsibility and wants to...
But again, that's like a 21st century story.
Right, so. Right. Yeah, I'm not so sure that would be relevant here, but anyway, something to think about. Okay. Ibai Elihu. Bat etzel abanim, b'isha etzel ha'achim, b'isha etzel b'nei ha'bal mahu. What if he gives it to the bat instead of all the sons? Or a woman instead of his brothers? Or a woman instead of the sons of, right, basically his sons? Mahu, what would we say? So Amar Ravina Mishmei D'Rava, Bekulu lo kana, in all these cases, it's clear he's making them an apitropus. Only levar me ishto arusav ishto grusha. So he says, just like the Gemara said before, basically, we're going to assume only the ishta grusha and the isha arusa are we going to say she's kone. But Rav Avira has a different understanding. Mishmei D'Rava Amar, bekulu kane, in all the cases, she actually gets everything. The bat, the wife, okay, in front, instead of his brothers, instead of his sons. Levar, except for which case? Dafka, sorry, the cases I just said, except for Isha Etzel Achim v'Isha Etzel B'nei Habal. Now, the only case where we're concerned that he's making her an apitropos is Dafka, a woman by her brothers, and a woman in place of her sons. But any other case, like a Bat Ben Abanim, okay, we're basically not going to assume that he's making them an apitropos. And if he gives it to them, he's giving them actually as a matana. Okay, by Rava Bibari. What if this is all happening not as he's on his deathbed, where you're assuming he's trying to give respect to one person over the others, but he's actually healthy when he says it? Okay? So, heach, b'shchiv mera hu denichale delish tamun mila aval bibari ha kai ihu. Is it, if he's trying to get people to respect his wife, let's say, let's give the wife example, that's the classic, or the older brother, or the younger son, so we can understand... on his deathbed, that's exactly what he's concerned about. But Bibari, hai kai ihu. But when he's alive, he's there. He's there to create the respect. If he wants people to respect his wife, then he'll do that himself. He doesn't need to say, I'm giving you all my nechasim as a way of having everybody respect her. O Dilma, or do we say, Bari nami, nichale delishtamun mila mehashta. Or is he kind of setting the tone for the future? That if he doesn't do enough to get people to respect his wife in his life, right, maybe he wants to do it now, already earlier when he's healthy, so that down the road, when the time comes, right, these are people who kind of plan for the future, people will respect her. So let's try to figure it out. Tashma. Let's learn from here. Hakotei perot nechasav lishto, govek tubata minakarka, lemechze lishlish uli... govek tubata minakarka. If he says... I'm giving you the perot of all my property to his wife. She can still get her ketubah from the karka. But lemechze, lishlish ulirevia, govek tubata min ashar. One second. Right, if he says, one second. Govek hope tubata min karka. Right, the whole question here is going to be, and this is going to be for the rest of the daf, about... Can we assume if the husband... Now, the husband committed certain things to the wife. But there's an assumption that if he gives her a large amount of money for something or a piece of property, then maybe she's, in accepting that, she's mochelet on her ketubah. She's basically saying, I'll take this in place of my ketubah. So if he says, peirot nechasav, the fruits of my property are going to you, then she obviously wasn't mochel on her ketubah. He's just giving her the fruits of the like the produce. She could still get her ketubah from the karka. If he says, I'm giving you lemechze l'shlish l'revia, a percentage of all my property, then govek tubata min ashar. So then, one second, this means that she... Right, she gets part of the property. So again, she could still, she still gets her ketubah, but there's an assumption that she's not giving up on the shibud of her shtar, of her ketubah. Katav nechasav liishto, v'yatza alav shtar chov. He writes all of his property to his wife. And then, okay, so now what happens? He says, I'm giving you all my property. And then what happens? Yatza alav shtar chov. Then someone comes along and says, hey, I'm owed money. Now, what generally what happens is, if her ketubah is meshuabad, right, to the land. So if, let's say, they're married, he gives a ketubah, then he sells all his property. He has no more property left, so she has nowhere to get her ketubah from. Okay? And then she, I'm sorry, that's the opposite. She can go demand the ketubah from whoever bought the property. But if he says, after he sold all the property, right, or right at a later date, and then he says, I'm going to give you all my property when I die, and then, actually, it wouldn't be, let's say he says, I'm going to give you all my property when I die, that's not, there's no lien on that. It's just whatever happens to be left when I die. So if anybody bought his property and he's left with nothing at that point, so she might get all of his nechassim, but in the end, she'll get nothing. And she loses her rights to the, you understand? The assumption is, again, we'll see inside the issues about it, but if he writes all his nechassim lisho and she accepts it, and basically through that she's mochel on the ketubah, so depending on how you view this, is she mochel on the ketubah or is she not? If she's mochel on the ketubah, then she could basically lose out everything. Because if he's still got property when he dies, great. But if he doesn't, then she's stuck. So Rabbi Elazar Omer, he says, actually, don't worry about it. Tikra matanata b'talmoro ketubata. Rip up the matana. And as he wrote, kol nechasav lishto. We're not going to leave this woman high and dry. We're going to rip up the shtar matana as if it didn't exist, which means her ketubah is still valid. B'talmoro ketubata, and she gets her ketubah money. But chachamim omrim, and we paskin this way, which is crazy, tikrat ketubata v'talmoro matanata. V'nimtzeit karachat mikan u'mikan. Right, that's a classic, right? Karachat, she's bald on both sides, okay? She doesn't have her ketubah anymore because she was mochel on the shibud of the ketubah. And she accepted all his nechassim, but now all of his nechassim are gone. Okay, so she's got nothing. V'amar Rabbi Yehuda nachtom, and now Rabbi Yehuda comes and testifies, ma'ase v'ira davar bebat achoti kala, it happened to my daughter's, to my bebat achoti, happened to my niece, who was also my kala, who married my son. Okay, cousins married each other. Uba ma'ase lefnei chachamim, and it came before the chachamim, v'amru tikra ketubata v'talmoro matanata. And they basically said, she gets nothing. V'nimtzeit karachat mikan u'mikan, and she was basically left high and dry. Okay, now they're going to say, ta'ama diatza alav shtar chov. The whole reason this happened was because there was a chov, right? Someone basically came and took, that's what happened. There was some property left, but someone had a shtar chov and said, I'm owed this money, and they took it. Halo yatza alav shtar chov, but if there wasn't a shtar chov, then kanya. Okay, then it would have worked. Then it would have been fine because she would have been able to get the nechassim. Ubimai, ilema b'shchiv mera. Okay, if you want to say, okay, now we have to start with where, one second, this is, right, where we start here, okay? We have to remember, go back to the beginning. This was all, Rava was asking about a bari that wrote all his nechassim to ishto. Would we still say the same thing that basically he was only making her an apitropos? So, b'mai, ilema b'shchiv mera, v'har mar lo asa al apitropos. Right? If this case was about a shchiv merah, so we said, hakotev kol nechasav lishto is not relevant. It's just making her an apitropos. Right? The whole premise here is that writing hakotev kol nechasav lishto actually works. And the whole premise of our previous sugya was it doesn't work. So therefore, what do they say? Elalav bibari. It must be talking about a bari, and that's why it works. And therefore, a bari, if he writes all his nechasim to ishto, it actually would count. We wouldn't say he's just making her an apitropos. But then they say, no, you could still say this case, la'olam b'shchiv mera. You could say this case was b'shchiv mera. V'rav Avira mokele b'kulu. And Rav Avira, if you remember, what did Rav Avira say? Amar b'kulu kane levar mi'ishai etzal achim v'ishai etzal b'nei abal. So he would basically say, oh, this was one of those cases where it would be kone. In other words, you could still say it's a shchiv mera, in which case it doesn't teach us anything about a bari. Okay? Ravina would be mokela b'ishto arusa b'ishto grusha. Okay, Ravina would have said this was talking about an ishto arusa and ishto grusha, which are also exceptions to the rule. Am Rav Yosef bar Menume. By the way, it couldn't be ishto grusha in this case. It would have to be the ishto arusa because he's calling her his wife. Am Rav Yosef bar Menume. Am Rav Nachman. Halacha tikra ketubata v'talmoro matanata v'nimtzeit karachat mikan u'mikan. Okay, so now Rav Yosef Rav Yumi says in the name of Rav Nachman that this is actually the way we paskin, that we rip up her ketubah, HaKotev Kol Nechasav. Okay, we're now getting off the issue a little bit about the Kotev Kol Nechasav in a case where we would say he's just making her an apitropos. Now we're talking about in a case where she would be Kone, so basically she's Kone, and she is, in doing that, she's basically considered that she's Machla Al Ketubata. So now they say this is quite strange, because do you think the woman would have been Machla Al Ketubata if she knew she was going to lose everything? Of course not. So Lameimra, Delo Azar Rav Nachman Bartar Umdina? Are you trying to say that Rav Nachman doesn't go after Umdina? What's Umdina? What we would have assumed a person would say, right? A woman, what do we think she's really thinking? She'd never be Mochla or Ketubah if she knew that she was going to lose out. Bahatanya, but here we're going to show that Rav Nachman goes Batar Umdina in a different case. Haresha halach b'no lemedinat hayam, v'shama shemeit b'no. So his son goes abroad, and the father heard that his son died. V'amag v'katav kol nechasav l'achirim. He then wrote his son out of the will because he thought the son was dead. And then the son comes. Matanato matana. The son loses out according to Tanakama. Rabbi Shimon ben Menasya omer, ein matanato matana. She'ilu haya yodea shebeno kayam, lo ktavan. Rabbi Shimon ben Menasya comes and says exactly the way we would have thought to say about this woman, that the father never would have written it had he thought the son was still alive. Likewise, the woman never would have been mochel on her ketubah had she known that she would have ended up with nothing. So, why is this relevant to Rav Nachman? Because Amar Rav Nachman halachaka Rabbi Shimon ben Menasya. Dafka Rav Nachman paskan like Rabbi Shimon ben Menasya in that case, showing that he goes batar umdina. So in that case, go batar umdina. Why wouldn't he go like that in our case? So now we're going to obviously say shanei hatam. This is different. Why? Denichale de tipuk ale kala de katvinu niale lahanu nechasim. There's a certain hana'a that the woman gets by having the husband write all his nechasim to her. And she'd rather, even if she might lose out in the end, she gets a certain standing in the community. By having it known that the husband wrote her all of his possessions, that gives her a certain standing in the community, which is interesting. We always think of women, and they didn't have so much standing in those days. But women liked to have standing even in those days. They were happy to be looked at as, oh, this is a woman who her husband obviously respects her because he's writing all of his nechasim to her. And that she was willing for that hana'ah to be mochel on her ketubah if down the road something were to happen and there'd be nothing left when, you know, and a Baal Chov comes and takes the money. Okay, so that's the answer to that. Now, I'll just kind of start a little bit into the sugya that takes us for the rest. Actually, maybe we'll start on Sunday and we'll start on Sunday from Tanan Hatam, okay? In the end, if we don't make it up on Sunday, we'll at least make it up. We'll try to make it up by Monday and get on track, okay? So we'll start here tomorrow about another issue about what if he gives all sorts of cases or different opinions about if somebody gives a gift of something to the wife, is the implicit assumption is that she was mochel on her ketubah and that she's getting that in place of her ketubah, okay? And what things would it be and how that would work, okay? And what the assumption is, what does she have a role in this whole thing? Did she give some indication? Did she not? Do we do it even if she didn't give an indication? There's going to be a whole slew of opinions about what the case is and how we view it, okay?